I'm backstage with Maestro Paul Goodwin, and we have heard the Posthorn Symphony of Mozart and the Stamitz Viola Concerto. First of all, Paul Goodwin, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
And I want to talk about the Stamitz a little bit. He fascinates me. What a strong composer he is. He sneaks up on you, doesn't he?
Yeah, of course, he lived for a long time. You know, he was born before Mozart and died after Mozart. And we forget about him, really, because he wrote so many concertos for different instruments. Of course, the viola was his own instrument. And by the end of his life, he'd given up on the violin. It was the only viola he played. But, of course, there are all those symphonies, and it's full of a lot of character. The thing about Stamitz is a little bit like Haydn in a way, in that you have to work at his music to make it really come to light. You can't just play what's on the page. With Mozart, if the interpreter gets in the way, then it destroys Mozart. You have to let Mozart be Mozart. But with Haydn, and even more with Stamitz, you need to be an interpreter and really give it its full value.
Well, I really wanted to ask you about this because we say, oh, the Mannheim School, and he's part of the second, third generation of composers who are really starting to take the orchestra into different directions from when it began being an orchestra. I would think that the temptation for a conductor would be to want to really make the parts that pop even pop more. You know, is that a temptation, or just to let the orchestration speak? Because he's really doing things with orchestration that hadn't been done before.
Well, this is lovely, of course, because we have horns and clarinets in this orchestra, which is a very different color. But yes, the temptation is to make it pop more. And I think also for today's audience, you need to do that a little bit. For Stamitz's audience, he didn't need to do anything because it was all a big surprise from their worldview, if you like. Whereas for us, we have to do a little bit more, I think, to bring it out. But I think that it can really take it. It can be very dramatic, his music.
Well, it's just charming. Of course, we have Beethoven coming up, the Consecration of the House, the Fourth Symphony. And this is, in many ways, this program is in your wheelhouse because your background, of course, is in early music and oboist, Baroque oboist. Well, anyone who can play the Baroque oboe, first of all, to make a sound, a pleasant sound out of the oboe, and then they rip all of the keys off and they say, play this.
Well, the most interesting thing I had was playing the Gazzaladra, the Silken Ladder of Rossini, on an original oboe. And because we have the original oboe that Rossini's first oboe player used, and it also only has two keys, and it's a very simple instrument. And of course, the Gazzaladra is extremely chromatic, and my God, that was a challenge to do that. But for every challenge, you reap a lot of rewards as far as color and all the rest of it's concerned. Yeah, I mean, I had enormous fun. It was my years of education, I feel, 16 years playing everything, you know, from of course Purcell and Lully all the way through to Wagner or Bruckner and some Mahler on the instrument of that period, and researching it in the bibliotheques and all the rest of it, and buying the right instruments for the job. But it's not a dry pursuit. It's a pursuit to find more in the music and to see what those instruments teach you about what you can't do with the music. So I learned an awful lot, and I try to bring that when I come to modern orchestras.
Well, and of course, now as a conductor on the other side of the stick, I guess, and now with Beethoven and with the Philadelphia Orchestra, so you bring all that schooling that you talk about to that. And how does Beethoven translate under that schooling then?
Well, of course,
A large question.
No, it's larger. But this orchestra has experience with people like Roger Norrington coming to conduct them. Yeah. It's an orchestra that, apart from the beauty of the sound, they love to be flexible. And they, of course, you know, they're of the highest quality. And so as a conductor coming from my direction, the first thing one needs to start off with enormous respect for what they do and how they do it, and to find a way to mold what I want to do with what they can do already. And the rehearsal process is one of two things. One is of osmosis, because I hate to say you can't, and no, and it's done this way. You can't say that to such a wonderful orchestra, and I wouldn't want to. It's more a matter of cajoling them in my direction, both visually from the gestures I make, and also just adding in little bits of phrasing and how you use vibrato and all the rest of it. And gradually, by osmosis, they come in my direction. And the other thing is, of course, is playing dominoes, which all conductors try to do, is you find a few moments that you rehearse and get exactly as you want, and you knock that domino over, and then it ripples to lots of other phrases that start to come that way. And so gradually over the days, they put themselves in a Paul Goodwin microchip, and then whatever you play starts to be done in that way.
And also, the learning curve must be shorter these days because so many players now have played, you know, in Baroque orchestras or have done different things, even with different kinds of instruments. And so they're used to being flexible, and they are flexible, as you've said.
Yeah, and they want to be because why would they invite me if it wasn't for me to give something different? So they're expecting something different. If I didn't, they'd be disappointed. And it's lovely talking to players. They said, "Oh well, the last time we did this was with Muti or Eschenbach." Or whoever. And so it's lovely to hear their views on what other conductors have done with these various famous pieces. It works very well.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.